It's been a week since the fire that has torn through Parliament and obviously sent shockwaves through South Africa. We want to get a view this evening from a parliamentarian himself, Member of Parliament, Ahmed Mansour Sheikh, Imam of the National Freedom Party. Ahmed Mansour, Jazakallah khairan for joining us this evening. Assalamu alaikum and welcome.
Walaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh and jazakallah for giving me an opportunity to be on the air tonight.
An absolute pleasure, Mr. Mansour Sheikh Imam, and obviously to hear how this has gone down from somebody who frequents the House, and this is obviously your place of, if you'd like, one of your places and most important places of employment, if you want to put it in that particular way. When the news broke, what was your first reaction to this?
You know, strange enough, brother, I think you're the first person that said it absolutely correctly. I am yet to hear anybody talk about ownership or anybody talk about a sense of belonging when you are a member of parliament. It's like it's your home. It's like your home has been destroyed or destructed. You know, this is, and I haven't heard any of these other people talk about it. It's the first time I'm really hearing it. So let me commend you for that. Indeed, you know, there's a sense of belonging when it comes to Parliament. I've been there for 8 years. So we look at that as home because we spend a lot of time there. Lots of decisions are making, taken there. You know, laws are passed there. So, and this has been happening for a long period of time. And when I first, you know, I'm still recovering from an accident which I've had 7 weeks ago. And I decided to go to Cape Town for a week's rest, and I was shocked when I heard there was a fire. And despite the state I was in, I decided, let me go there and see. And I promise you, it was heartbreaking. It was painful to see this beautiful building of Parliament, you know, which belongs to all of us in this country, up in fire, in flames. And of course, we couldn't go close by. The next day, we were not able to get inside either because the risks were there. And rightfully so, because, you know, the fire flared up again. And that's where it is. The NFP offices, amongst others, have been totally destroyed. We've got four offices there. All of them have been gutted. We haven't been inside to look at it yet. It's just been handed over to the South African Police Services. That was on Thursday afternoon. They are now it's a crime scene. They are working on it. And we have a chief whips meeting tomorrow and party leaders meeting to discuss, you know, where we go from here. Well, we know the sauna is going to take place at the City Hall in Cape Town. But what is very important to note, brother, is that, you know, when I questioned them last week in a Chief Woods meeting with our speaker and the Department of Public Works, to my shock, I was told that there's not even any insurance cover for this building. So it simply means that it's going to estimated to cost about 1 billion rand, and it's going to have to come from the taxpayers, money we don't have. Simply means that you're going to have to rob one to pay the other. And that means that, of course, some programs are going to suffer if you want to rebuild Parliament.
I just want to probe, you know, the details of what you've mentioned, the damage, and to quantify the damage. And I'm, you know, absolutely sad, and I convey my sadness to you, MP, for hearing that your parliamentary offices have been gutted. That's, you know, a tangible place of work for yourself. When people see Parliament, obviously the most common scenes people would see would be the National Assembly during addresses like the State of the Nation address. But give us a sense of the location of the fire and how, as a parliamentarian who is there on a daily basis, which parts of the building were those, and what would you typically be doing in those parts, and how would that affect the overall functioning of this institution?
Well, let me start off by saying this parliamentary building is also a tourist attraction, and from time to time we have a lot of tourists. We have tourists. We have children from schools that visit this. So, you know, it's quite an attraction. There's no doubt about it. And, of course, we have different sections. You've got your administrative section that has also been burnt. The IT section has been burnt as well and destroyed. The main arena where we have our parliamentary debates the National Precinct, many other parts of the buildings have been destroyed. Part of the bridge to the NCOP has also been destroyed. The strange thing about this is that, you know, it appears that it's not the one fire that might have erupted that led to the other fires. And that is what is very strange about this, that the fire appears to have broken out in different parts of the parliamentary buildings at the same time, but far away from each other. So it's not the one fire that set up and then, you know, it led to the other buildings being affected as well. And that is the difficulty about it. We are trying to establish what has actually happened. Now, in 2018, there's been a report, and not a very favorable report, and not all those recommendations were implemented. And I've said many a times that if there's one department in this government that is like an intensive care unit, that's how badly functioning, is the Department of Public Works, who's responsible for the buildings, all the health, the clinics, the hospitals, the police stations, and everything, all fall under the Public Works Department. So those recommendations in 2018 were quite damning and clearly indicated the risk attached, for occupation purposes in the parliamentary buildings, and nothing. While some of them were implemented, not all of them. Then in March, again, we've had a fire. And I think it was either underplayed or downplayed, because they said to us eventually that it was some electrical cable fault that caused it. And other allegations are that indeed they thought that was sabotage, but it is being covered up. That's where we are. Even that, they did not take seriously and do enough about it. And that's the other problem. Now, we come back to the issue of the person that was found. The CCTV camera was supposed to be monitored 24 hours. There was no one manning that station at that point in time. The office of the secretary, acting secretary, says that denies that the protection services were put on leave because of budgetary constraints. But I can tell you that when I went on to the precinct after the fire and I spoke to police officers, because I know them reasonably well, and they reiterated that there was no protection services at all. It was only the police officers that were there and on the outskirts, of course, in the entrances and things like that. So they were not there. They also confirmed that the CCTV room was not monitored at that point in time. Eventually, through the CCTV, through the recorded one, they were able to see where the person was. It eventually followed them to find the person. They have found him, and he was there. He had a laptop. He had some explosives. He had some documents. He had some A4 paper and a whole lot of things, and he got in through the back door. Now, the thing is, it's a coincidence that he gets in and then this place is on fire. Many of them are ruling out sabotage. They say he's a homeless person. So the question I'm asking, I don't rule out anything based on the fact that, remember, there was also a bomb that somebody was carrying at the Bram Fischer, which is Bloemfontein Airport, during the same period, a day or 2 days before that. We know what has happened to the Concorde at the moment. We know about the unrest that took place in July. We know that government has put the South African National Defence Force and the South African police on full alert. And we've actually appropriated additional budget because there's a threat to the national key points and things like that. So we can't rule out sabotage completely. And my argument is, if you're not expecting a person who's dressed as a homeless to go there and go and set the place alight, are you expecting somebody with a three-piece suit and a Mercedes Benz to go there and park and do that? So let us not rule out, anybody or anything in terms of why or what actually happened. The fire department now, I think those that have been on site have now also provided a report, and they found some weaknesses as well. But again, it does not tell you that that's what actually caused the fire. So until that investigation is completed and we establish whether it is sabotage or whether actually it is because of the poor state of the buildings, it will be very difficult for people to form their own conclusions that now indeed this is a homeless person, so he can't do it. You know, it's and blame the other one. So I think we must take it very seriously. In my understanding, we have a very serious threat in this country in terms of the national key points and things. And it is for that reason we've deployed more defense force and redirected more finances, which we took away from other departments. Why did we do that if we thought there was no real threat in the country? I mean, let's take what happened in July. Up to today, have you got to the bottom of it? We haven't. So I think there's more than meets the eye right now.
If you were to gauge the feeling from fellow members of parliament and look at the reactions in different parties, look at the reactions of executives, of the executive rather, would you feel that you found the reactions from people across the board to be, sincere and genuine, devastated at the loss of the house, or, are there some questions in the way people have reacted?
Well, I think the most of them that I have spoken to from many political parties are very disappointed. They are shocked, they are disappointed, they are hurt, because I think many of them, look at Parliament as home, particularly if you've been there for a long period of time. And there's a sense of belonging. Of course, there are those that laughed it off, that treat it, and, some of them are saying, well, it's good Parliament has been, colonialism is now burnt, let's move to Pretoria. And they forget that if you want to move the legislature from Cape Town to Pretoria, it's got to be an act of Parliament. You've got to take it through to Parliament and approve them. It can't be done overnight. There's been talk about moving it for a long period of time. And, that was also politics as far as I'm concerned. It's one of the reasons I would believe it's because it's DA run the Western Cape, so they want to take it away. Now that the ANC might lose Gauteng and so on and things, so they might not even take it away. And then there was a request, like from the EFF and things, we should have our sauna and our meetings. They are one of them that opposed it. We have homes in the Western Cape paid for by Parliament, paid for by the taxpayers, which will stand empty. Why should we go and have sauna in Pretoria, book into the hotels, and spend millions of rands, which we're going to waste, when we can have it, the City Hall and the council chambers and things in the Western Cape does not belong to a political party. It belongs to the people of this country. It belongs to the state. So there's no reason why we should not be going and using it because it's being governed by another political party. And I'm glad that sanity prevailed, because the ANC and the caucus rejected it. They felt that the DA and others were manipulating the situation, and they were trying to score points. But I think they've come to their senses, and they've now realized that now we're going to have it at the City Hall. But it's disappointing that you can have leaders of political parties and politicians who would look at this so lightly and go to the extent of saying it's good that these buildings have been burnt. It should have been completely burnt and that kind of thing. I mean, it's not on. But I can tell you the majority of the members that I have spoke to from most of the 14 political parties that are represented in the National Assembly, very, very, very many of them are disappointed. They find it very painful. And they want it to be restored. Remember, it's a heritage site. It's going to take a long time. It's going to cost a lot of money. And whether we're going to really get to the bottom of who did what or why what went wrong is another question.
You mentioned their politicking, MP. I'm just unsure. Can we just, are we able to just brush it off as politicking, or many people have read deeper into those comments, the fact that people were seemingly triumphant about it, and, very soon thereafter were already, proposing also all kinds of alternatives and, pushing a particular narrative, whether it's about colonialism, whether it's about moving of parliament. Can we just brush that off as being politicking and purely coincidental?
Anything can be expected in a country right now. Let me just start off by saying, if you look at the allegation, and some of these are still allegations, and it's early days. I'm told that when the police went to the suspect's house, based on the address that he had provided to court, they found a 1980, they found a newspaper of Wallace, is it Wallace Janusz? Janusz Wallace? The one that, the Polish immigrant, the one that actually killed Chris Arnie. They found that newspaper there as well, at his place. Some of them are saying that he's homeless. Others are saying, no, he's not homeless. They know him quite well. There are also allegations that he was part and parcel of the Brackenfell protest that took place at that school in Cape Town. Okay? There's also some video going around whether there's any truth in that. And I think the Maverick is trying to get confirmation from the African National Congress, particularly the MKs, whether there's any truth in the fact that this guy was one of them that marched in support of Jacob Zuma many years ago. So there's a whole lot of things that are being said. For me, I won't rule that out, but I can tell you now, anything is expected right now. I honestly believe, based on what happened even in July, this is a beginning of a lot more to come. And I won't take this very lightly, and I won't even rule out that there will be political parties or leaders of political parties that might have something to do with trying to, either change the regime in this country or cause mayhem in this country if they don't have it their way. And this is a concern for me. If you've heard the latest statement that councillors in KwaZulu-Natal are making, they are saying, we are Jacob Zuma. Jacob Zuma is us. And they are also threatening that if you touch Jacob Zuma, you're touching all of us. So you can see where this is actually heading. It's more to it than, you know, we might just feel that it's something very light, that we should not pay too much of it. This is not just one thing catching on fire. In fact, my understanding is a day or 2 days ago, I think one of the, there's been a fire in Cape Town as well. So you can see exactly, remember not long ago, even the, there was the system was hacked in the judicial system in the Western. So you can see where all these things are heading. And by virtue of the fact that the president has just now, 2 days ago, confirmed again the deployment of South African National Defense Force, okay? Remember, we were supposed to, we've only used them for a period of time because of the unrest, and it was supposed to go back to normality. And he hasn't done that. So there is a lot more that's going on in the country. And particularly if you look at the ANC going to the conference in 2022, and you can see the tension, you can feel the tension there as to what is going on there as well. And so I think we must expect the unexpected. We must prepare for a very difficult year, and don't rule out based on the fact that somebody might look like a homeless person, because I want to reiterate the point that surely you're not going to get a person who's going to be well-dressed with chauffeur there to go out there and go and blow up a building or something of that nature. You know, you're going to create an alibi. It'll be, in my opinion, it is better for you to send a homeless person if you want to, so you've got to elevate. No, hold on. This guy can't do it. He's not capable of doing it. So, yes, I think there is more to it.
Indeed. A final one for you, just a minute or so. If we go by these particular leads, like you say, nothing is conclusive. So it's just theories. It's just, bits of evidence there at the moment. But if it follows the same trajectory or the same pattern as what we saw in July, This is ANC on ANC, and in the process, a country is burning, important institutions are burning. Where does this leave the rest of us? I mean, do people prioritize saving the ANC to save the rest of us, or what kind of interventions are required from the rest of society to keep this country afloat and to prevent it from disintegrating anymore?
I must say, in my own observation, in KwaZulu-Natal, I've learned one thing, that some people, they want something. If they don't get it, they don't mind destroying the entire organization. It's either I get it or nobody gets it. That is the attitude, and that's the difficulty you're having. A lot of what is going on is the infighting with the ANC, and other parties are also capitalizing on that. And that's the first problem we've got. But I want to tell you, The only way South Africa is going to come right, if the people on the ground rise. Because everything that's happening from a political perspective is affecting the lives of the 59 million people. People are very vulnerable out there. Politicians come out there, they promise you the world, I'll give you this, I'll give you that, I'll do this and I'll do that. What have they done? 28 years gone. Where have we gone? We're not going up, we're going down. That's basically what the situation is in the country. You've got a 70% unemployment, youth unemployment in this country. You can look at where we are going. You can look at the levels of crime at this point in time. You know, so we have a lot of challenges. I think it is time that the people must rise and people must claim back this country. Right now it is in the hands of politicians. If you see the Zondo Commission report and what it said and what happened in the Zondo Commission, the appointments that were made by one or two people. The president and the deputy president was responsible. And I've always said you must separate politics from administration. They don't want to do these things. Corruption is rife. You know, forget about state capture, brother. Local level, I can tell you, billions of rands are getting every day. Every single day, people, as I talk to you, they're sitting and planning which tenders they're getting, what they're going to do. Okay? So I want to tell you, people on the ground, and we have capacity. We've got intellects in these people, people in this country that can take us forward. The problem is they're not part of the solution. They're not part of the mainstream politics. You don't, politicians don't create an avenue for these people to come on board. So I think those people who have got the capacity, the integrity, the qualification, the passion and commitment must come in mainstream politics and take this country forward. You cannot expect the current politicians of today to be able to do that. They failed for 28 years. What makes you think we're going to do it in the future?
Indeed, a very sober and worrying prognosis for the rest of the year. And obviously two big issues at the back of our mind: accountability for the July riots and now accountability for people burning down literally a very important institution in the tier of government. I thank you so much, Ahmed Mansoor Sheikh Imam, for speaking to us this evening. Barakallahu feek. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.